discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
The concrete jungle, with skyscrapers standing hundreds of meters tall, can be quite effective in accommodating urban residents and office workers. But when humanity stays aloof from nature, we sometimes feel stressed without even noticing it. Pocket parks offer a good solution to overdeveloped downtown areas where land is costly and scarce and hard to come by. Hello, I'm Lai Ming, and this is Roundtable. Today, with my colleagues Niu Huling and Gu Yan, we catch up on the latest goings-on regarding urban planning. And guys, you've been living in Beijing for a while, and I'm not sure if you've noticed, ever since the organization and hosting of Olympic Games here in Beijing.
That's when
a lot of changes have taken place, especially in recent 2 years, in the lead up to the Beijing Winter Olympics in 2022. Massive urban planning projects, urban construction projects have took place. And in my community, in my neighborhood, there was there once was a deserted strip of land. Now they've been turned into parks, a belt of parks. And it seems that this is going on throughout the city, if not throughout the country. And this is all about the pocket parks that that we want to talk about today.
A pocket park is a small public park that is usually less than 0.5 hectares in size and occupies 1 to 3 municipal lots. They are also known as mini parks or parklets.
Parklets?
Yeah, pocket parks are often found in urban areas where other outdoor space is limited or non-existent. They can provide a variety of benefits, including ecological benefits. Pocket parks can create a green space that can attract urban wildlife. They can also relieve the environmental stress on larger parks by helping to ease overcrowding. And also economic benefits. Pocket parks can attract new businesses and residents, and which is, I think, it will be benefit to local tourism industry. As well as public health benefits, pocket parks can have a positive public health image.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely the kind of advantages we see about pocket parks. And here in Beijing, there are definitely a lot of those. Actually, by the end of 2023, there are over 300 pocket parks. I'm going to call it parklets because I am not good with pocket park.
Or
I don't know why. Yeah, something's going on here. But it's definitely not because other kind of green areas or open door spaces are not existed. Because here in Beijing, there are a lot of bigger parks. There are certain kinds of, let's say, forest parks, mm-hmm. as well as city center parks. There are many of those already. And I feel
old
like...
Old and new. The
old
Summer
and new.
Palace, Tarantine.
That,
and then
yes,
the,
that counts.
The Olympic Green, which was constructed in the lead up to the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing.
And my feeling is that with all that major parks existing and fulfilling the needs of people living surrounding those areas, we are looking at a relatively more micro way to design the city, make use of the little space adjacent to, for example, between two residential areas or on the corner of a major avenue. And with all that little spaces, you can do certain designs, mm-hmm. you can make it a certain place to demonstrate the history of that little community, or you can make it an area for little kids to run around and to play slides or play hide and seek in, or maybe simply grow different types of plants and make the area easy on the eyes. And all that constitutes to different types of pocket parks we're looking at.
Right. There seems to have been a change in thinking or with regard to urban planning. Mm. I mean, if it's the old-fashioned way, the economist's perspective, you would think that it's worthwhile to turn the land into more profitable economic zones,
areas.
Commercial areas where you can house more businesses, where people can get their commodities and services, and it's making the land worthwhile, making the investment worthwhile. But what has changed nowadays? I mean, why are urban planners suddenly interested in building pocket parks across the city?
I think ecological benefits is one of their major concerns. I remember I traveled to Xiamen in January. I found that there are a lot of pocket parks around a beautiful lake in the downtown of the city. And I spoke with the a lot of city urban planners. I spoke with the regulators of this lake, and they told me that it's very important to build these pocket parks because they will create a wetland. Urban wetlands for birds, the wading birds such as the egrets, to dwell on. For instance, the city used to be used to be the habitat for it's a very important habitat for egrets, and it's been the whole island of Xiamen has been acclaimed as the egret island.
Okay.
But in the 1970s and 1980s, because of economic growth, they have the local people have to build factories, have to build a lot of industrial facilities.
Residential areas as well.
To increase their GDP growth in the 1980s, which is very popular in cities in China. But in the 1990s, when a big lake in the center of the city has been heavily polluted, and the city decided to treat the pollution, and because a lot of investment were driven away because of the pollution, and then a lot of efforts have been put into the treatment of the lake. And after the treatment of the lake, after the lake water was purified, they decided to create a lot of pocket parks surrounding this lake to create a wetland for various birds to live.
So the priorities have changed somehow. I mean, economic development still is the center of attention here, both for the central government and for regional governments and for people, because it really matters a lot to continue growing and continue providing job opportunities for the mm-hmm. population. So that still is important. But now on top of that, or besides that, we are now taking into consideration our own needs or the residents' needs mm-hmm. to have a healthier living environment, and pocket park is one of the solutions. It's mm-hmm. somehow like a contingency. All of that development has already been done. You can't tear them up and then just build parks anew, because it's costly and it takes time, and it's not going to lead to results immediately. So as a contingency plan, maybe building pocket parks is a cost-effective way to change the situation somewhat.
And also, in the meantime, you can hit two birds with one stone. For many very well-maintained pocket parks in both Beijing, Shanghai, and other cities, relatively bigger cities, they have transformed this little area in between residential areas into a place to enjoy, to allow people in, to spend their leisure time, and to start a small business. And you would imagine these kind of businesses would open to not only the people living nearby, but also tourists as well. And that would, again, hitting two birds with one stone. In the meantime, that is also within the plan of the 15-minute living circle
right.
that we talked about here on Roundtable. That is to provide people with a relatively more comfortable living condition that they can reach a lot of different functions they would need in their life within
including
15 minutes.
Supermarkets, grocery, hospitals, schools, primary schools, daycare, and then including this place for people to hang out and be close to nature.
Yes, and in the meantime, many of these pocket parks are not closed parks. They would also serve the function of providing a pathway between two residential areas or a residential area to a commercial area. That is a good and also environmentally friendly design for people as well.
And you guys have all touched upon this somewhat, and that is there are functions, there are capabilities that these pocket parks will have to fulfill. Guo Yan mentioned pocket parks in Xiamen, where they are creating space for wildlife to hang out. And then New Holing touched upon the possibility of maybe hosting businesses for the neighborhood or for the residents to have access to. And this is obviously a very inclusive way to look at the issue. But should we also look at the specific situations or the specific locale upon which such pocket parks are being built? Because I for one agree that certain neighborhoods do have needs for a place to hang out and certain businesses. For instance, in my community, there is a place for little kids to hang out. There's a sand pit where kids go to get dirty. But just about 2 meters away from the sand pit, there's a fruit shop where parents can go to buy snacks and fruits and vegetables while they're at it. And so also kids, when they're tired, getting their clothes dirty and their hands dirty, they can go shopping for some yogurt. So there's need for that. But then just about 100 or 1,000 meters away from the same sand pit, next to a high-speed road, there is that strip of park that we talk about. I mean, then people often go there to more to hang out and do some physical exercise rather than go shopping for something. Because I also seen examples of, let's say, a small park located amongst the trees and quite close to a shopping area, but it's very, very obscure and very, very unknown among the population nearby. And as such, the coffee shop that the developer has somehow so thoughtfully created within the park was abandoned because no one was looking for a coffee shop there.
I think that is a really good point. And a lot of city planners and also the designers of such pocket parks are looking into these kind of situations. Many of them say that one major obstacle for these city parks to continue, city pocket parks to continue being thriving and serving the needs of people nearby, is that many people see these places as merely somehow it's kind of like a scene that they can appreciate. It's a lot of different trees and plants. It looks good, but they do not want to step in because there are no, for example, facilities or activities that are attractive enough for them to get in there and conduct human activity. And that is a major issue. That is why recently more of these pocket parks would have, for example, a theme when they start to be designed.
Oh, yeah.
They would have a theme of, for example, music. Mm. If the little pocket park is with a music theme, then you would see a lot of, for example, structures with the music theme. You would see exhibitions as well as small concerts, activities held in this little music pocket parks.
In that sense, then people nearby can bring their musical instruments
and
play there without worrying about bothering somebody else that's probably reading there.
It's encouraged to do so. And also there are other kinds of pocket parks, some designated to cater to the needs of little kids. Mm. Again, they would have a
sand pit, please.
Yes,
but
that
then,
too.
Maybe a tap for children to wash their hands and feet with afterwards.
And thinking about this, I remember there are two really nearby pocket parks in my hometown, Shanxi Province, in the city of Taiyuan. Actually, we have this Fenghe, that is the Fenghe River, and that is, it's a huge park surrounding that area. But just besides that major park, you see two pocket parks, and one pocket park is designated to host some kind of flower festivals. I see a lot of different types of...
You're a local. Some kind of flower.
A lot of different types of flowers and plants, and people with the appetite or with the ability to appreciate these flowers, mainly elder folks, would go there. They take their birds, they take a walk, they take pictures. And a really close by, there is another pocket park that is designated to demonstrate a lot of paintings and calligraphy works. Some of the calligraphies are done by masters. Some are actually done by people living nearby. And all these tiny little pocket parks serving different needs of even also people living nearby are quite enjoyable. And with these kind of relatively more detailed and special design, they would last a much longer time than those that are made almost universally with a lot of different plants and just that plants.
It sounds to me that these two parks that Niu Huling mentioned earlier, one for the botanist and the other for the calligrapher among us, require a lot of investment and a lot of investment in terms of how it's built and also in terms of how it's maintained, because in order to sustain such a pocket park, however small it is, I mean, you do require a certain amount of input to keep it clean, to keep the facilities in good shape. And that for me is, well, as I'm not really into city management, but I think it would incur extra cost.
The maintenance is a very big challenge for the building of pocket parks in big cities in China. A research led by a senior engineer at the Shanghai City Greening Management Center and showed that the pocket parks that were built, renovated, and upgraded in Shanghai, a big city, a metropolis in China, between the year 2018 and 2022, found that many of the locations had common issues, including poor landscaping and maintenance, inappropriate land selection, a lack of supporting facilities, and being unsuitable for hosting public activities. Like Niu have mentioned, a lot of public activities such as
unsuitable ones.
Drawing, calligraphy, and sometimes some pocket parks are not quite suitable for those public activities. However, the researchers concluded that it would be difficult for the government to devise a set of universal regulations or standards for such projects.
That is why for the very successful examples, if you look deeper into it, you would realize that local people have taken part in basically managing these little pocket parks. They are forming voluntary teams, cleaning and patrolling in and asking people not to litter and asking people walking their paths to pick up after their pets.
Right.
And that is because they enjoy such activities in these pocket parks and they consider these little pocket parks in between their residential communities their responsibility. I think that is one way to do it. And another way definitely would be attracting or inviting some business in, and the business would find it necessary to maintain the little pocket parks that they basically own.
But that would increase the budget for the government to recruit some businesses to clean or maintain the environment of the pocket park.
Because I've seen an example of a cafe shop in a pocket park. They say what they do is to make sure the place is quite clean and without the broken window effect, people have the tendency to keep it clean. So you just need an extra pair of eyes to supervise the situation.
Speaking of the voluntary work of the neighborhood,
it reminds me
of the moment when I was a young girl. When I was very young, I lived with my grandparents, and we live in a residential block. And there is a park. But at that time, like many years ago, we didn't have a concept like pocket park. But it was basically a pocket park in the neighborhood of my grandparents' community. My grandparents, they were voluntary. They were volunteers to clean the park. And many grandpas living in that community would wake up very early in the morning, like 5 in summer, and they would clean the park and do some garden work. Mm-hmm. Voluntarily.
It certainly makes sense to involve the local community in the maintenance of pocket parks, because after all, it's the local residents who get to enjoy the parks more easily. But again, I think pocket parks can essentially be contingencies or remedies for what was missing in the first round of urban planning. And I think as a contingency, there shouldn't be more contingency to, you know, to make up for what's missing in this contingency as such. So it's really important for urban planners to have an idea of what they hope to achieve, and then perhaps involve the community earlier on, even as they envision this program. You're listening to Roundtable. On the way up, another relatively obscure city in China has just shot to national fame for a simple snack. Stay with us to find out more.
Looking for passion? How about fiery debate? Want to hear about current events in China from different perspectives? Then tune in to Roundtable, where East meets West and understanding is the goal.
Welcome back. The Chinese city of Tianshui in Gansu province, northwest China, is gaining a lot of attention these days because of its iconic snack, Ma La Tang. Well, this is new.
Yes.
And Ma La Tang is, I know, it's a popular snack everywhere. Why is it so special with the snack in Tianshui?
Well, for those of you who has no idea what Ma La Tang is, you can imagine hot pot. If you haven't tried hot pot yet, you can imagine different types of ingredients, vegetable, meat, and other types of meatballs dipped in different types of sauce and then boiled a little bit. Then they come out with special sauce, giving you special flavors that you like. They can be very spicy, judging by the name, because Ma is numbing, La is spicy, and Tang is hot. So yeah, you can imagine the taste. But definitely, like Lai Ming has said, there are different types of Ma La Tangs out there in the country. There are the ones that focuses on numbing. There are the ones that focuses on having a lot of sesame sauces on it, making it creamy and very heavy in a good way. And there are the ones that are dipped basically in really tasty oil, edible oil. I mean, it sounds too much, but if you have one bite, you can't stop yourself from taking another. And the spicy Ma La Tang in Gansu focuses on putting on a lot of spice. And apparently, according to a local restaurant owner, different people would have different special ingredients, special sauce, making the Ma La Tang both iconic and catering to personal needs.
It actually is a healthy snack, given that you can find vegetables and eggs and meat and all kinds of food ingredients in there. It's a balanced structure of food that you can enjoy. But if you are willing to ignore the kind of salts and spices that you're putting, then it's rather healthy. But this reminds me of what went on just a few months ago in Harbin, and then much earlier last year in Zibo, Shandong province. What's with this trend of cities really trying to be influential and famous across the country so that they can attract a lot of tourists there?
It's hard to find out who started this whole campaign. I'm going to call it a campaign now. But apparently, as of March the 18th, Tianshui's Ma La Tang related posts have attracted 2 billion views on social media platforms. Wow. It has boosted jobs, tourism, and regional pride in the city. And with regional pride being boosted, people living in Gansu, Tianshui, started to offer this up-to-standard, actually state-of-the-art level of services to people traveling to the place for a taste of Ma La Tang, as well as their tourist spots. And they have designed special bus lines to travel directly from the railway station to the Ma La Tang food street area. They have started allowing tourists to enjoy these free shuttle buses from different tourist destinations in the country, it's a city or a county. And also,
it's a city, yeah.
It's a city, yes, thank you, Tianshui City. And in the meantime, all of the people living in Tianshui also offer this very friendly, very nice and sweet attitude to tourists out there. So I guess I am not surprised to see a lot of tourists are flocking into the city.
Yeah, and the city really take good care of the feelings of travelers more than its facilities. And I think I would say it's the soft power of a city to attract travelers from other places, its service, and its ability. I think the most important thing is the ability to tell stories. It's very important that Lai Ming has mentioned the three cities that came into fame overnight.
Harbin,
Zibo. And they have one thing in common is that they tell really good, touching stories. And I spoke last month or in February or January, I talked with some young people who work in the tourist industry. And one of them is a boy. I wouldn't call him a boy. He's a young gentleman. He was born in the year 2000, and he's a manager of a very big tourism company. And he's currently in charge of a cultural tourism project in Huangshan, a city in Anhui province. Yeah, and he told me that the most important thing about cultural tourism is storytelling. You have to tell the story, and the story is human related, and you have to dive deep into the culture of the local people, of the local history, and then you create a story that has something relate to the public. For instance, the local food, local cuisine, and sometimes a local figure, and sometimes a local cultural phenomenon. And then you create a human-related story. If you can find and create this a good human-related story, then it has very big potential that this place will attract a lot of travelers and became popular overnight, especially with the help of social media. And a lot of people would share the videos and nice photos on the internet, and then this whole thing will be exaggerated sometimes.
The key is making it easier and relatable. I mean, snacks obviously is something that people can all recognize and enjoy, and that's as mm-hmm. good as any reason to attract a large number of people there. And mm-hmm. I think this national campaign to direct people's attention from city to city, previously obscure or already famous, is making sense because we are living in the age of digital economy. A lot of stuff that you can buy, you can get them over the internet. And as such, it's important to get people's interest in the kind of experience, the unique experience that you can only enjoy when you travel. And this obviously is getting the economy moving, is getting all the money, all the funds circulating, and really giving vitality to the national economy. That's all the time we have for Roundtable. And thank you for listening. Bye-bye.